Hey, this is No Autopilot, founder of the Gaming Startup Collective and host of the Token Takeover podcast. In today's episode, we shared a conversation with Andy from Stardust, learning about some of the Web3 infra that their team is building, especially around user onboarding, as well as got a sneak peek at some of the user acquisition tools him and his team are building out. All right, enough of me talking. Let's jump in to the pod.
Hey, man, doing well. How are you?
Good. Having a good morning.
Is it overcast there? Like it's overcast here.
You know it.
Man, I used to have to drive that at least once a week between Portland and Seattle. That is a treacherous drive.
Yeah, I don't envy that.
Weekly? Why
weekly?
I covered national accounts, and so I had a small book, but it was spread across Montana, Seattle, Portland, and pretty much Seattle was the largest market out of it. So I had to be in town at least one day a week.
That's tough. If you have like a pair of Bluetooth headphones, it would be pretty easy to do both of these simultaneously in general. Like you could just have your phone, I'm assuming you're on your phone, right? You could just have your phone hooked to the Bluetooth headphones, and then we could just both sit in front of a microphone that's connected to Discord, and then we would just basically use Twitter Spaces with our Bluetooth headphones, essentially, and our audio is just going to get picked up naturally into Discord.
Yeah, I'm actually about to fire off a stage announcement, too. So in the Discord at the very top, you should be able to jump in there as well.
Okay, cool. I'm going to get my headphones. We can do that. Your community is mostly in Discord, so let's do that.
I love this, by the way. This allows us to kind of serve both audiences.
Exactly.
Not everyone, many founders are active on Twitter in our community. What's up, Mr. House? Thanks for joining. Also, shout out to the Stardust official. Good to see you as well. This is a cool best practice. We might do this as a standard going forward.
Yeah, man, I'm trying to sign into all Web3 games. There's my pitchy sales vibe. All right, so let me hop into the Discord now, and I'm just going to be listening on Twitter exclusively.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
I'm just going to have my microphone here sitting next to me.
All right, look at this. Andy with the great idea. I love this. This is fantastic. All right, well, cool. Let's get this thing kicked off. Shout out to the folks who are piling in here. I see Unfamiliar Dude, Mr. House, Chief Yeti. What's up, man? Long time no talk. We need to catch up. Today, we are joined by Andy.E from Stardust. Andy, how you feeling?
Very good. Very good. Another day in paradise. Web3 gaming.
It could be anywhere in the world, but you've chosen to be here right now.
Yep. Definitely saying hello to Unfamiliar Duty audience, saying hello to Mr. Yeti in the audience on Twitter.
Yeah. So we're doing a dual broadcast here. So if you're in the private Discord community, like Unfamiliar Dude, you're listening to us on the stage. If you're on Twitter, obviously listening to us on Twitter. If you are on Twitter, feel free to share. Go ahead and share this space with your founder friends. If you have folks who are building web games, maybe they're struggling either with the tool infrastructure side. I know everyone could use some help on user acquisition. So get this space shared with your network. Also, shout out to OX Davey. Good to see you in the audience there. Andy, let's jump in. For the folks who don't know, can you give us a quick overview of who you are, what you do, and what is Stardust?
So Stardust in general, well, I guess I'll start with myself. So I'm Andy. I'm the head of business development for Stardust. I joined in the summer of 2021. Stardust, I've been here for almost 2.5 years. My background before then, I was managing actually a structure for Goldman Sachs' data centers out in New York for 4 years. And it sounds interesting, but it's really boring. I liken it to working on a nuclear sub. It's very, very cool and lots of stuff to learn about. But once you get over that hump, someone's got to run the sub. At a certain point, you got to sweep sector 3 and, clean off sector 2 and turn the knob in sector 4. And that's basically what it was. So I learned a lot. It's very cool to learn about like critical systems infrastructure, but I essentially worked 5 hours a week when it came down to it. So I spent all my time crypto and gaming, and I got really big into software engineering on the side. I kind of knew about, I bought Bitcoin back in like 2013 and then didn't really think anything was not essentially Bitcoin for a long time. I basically thought everything was Dogecoin and Bitcoin, like just a bunch of tokens. And then my buddy who ended up being Framework Ventures kind of enlightened me as to what like Ethereum was and like the idea of kind of on-chain logic and all the composability of that. And I was insufferable for about 3 months after that. My wife didn't want to talk to me because I just was talking about Ethereum. And I had I was literally reading the Mashing Ethereum book out loud, like to her, being like, is this not the craziest thing you ever heard? And so that was in 2020. And so then I got, into big into DeFi, and then NFT stuff happened. I actually wrote a like blog post about NFTs, convincing myself that it wasn't a fad. And like that same week I went and bought a Bored Ape for 0.3 ETH. Just because I was like, I couldn't afford a CryptoPunk, but I was like, NFTs are going to be legit at some point in culture with tech. So I might as well just get some exposure to that. And then I was expecting like a 5-year turnaround. It was like a 5-fucking-month run. But anyway, so like in summer 2021, I decided to go full blur. Stardust, I joined as a solution engineer. Since then, I've been, I quickly transitioned to owning a lot of the client-side relationships. And May of last year, I moved to head of BD and hired Rich Cabrera. We acquired a user acquisition team. So on my team now. Very, very exciting stuff.
Very cool. I'd be remiss if I didn't shout out Rich. Shout out to Ready Player Rich.
Yeah, he's. I think he's on other spaces right now. Maybe I can pull him over here. But so to continue on to answer your question about what Stardust then. Stardust has been investing on infrastructure for a long, long time. Like actually almost 6 or 7 years old. Almost 7 years old now, which is pretty wild. So we are custodial wallet and blockchain infrastructure as well as position. And like the headline is that Stardust helps games, Web3 game developers make their game successful. We help with the entire game lifecycle on the developer and build side. We're providing, you know, incredibly scalable enterprise level custodial wallet infrastructure. We're totally invisible wallets. So we don't own anything part of a login widget. There's no branding or pop-ups or bump outs or logos of Stardust. We're completely white label sitting in the back. We're custodial. We have our money transmitter license in about states, not required for us to operate, but we are building for that future of what does it mean to choose a custodian because you have to, but in the short term, what does it mean to make choosing a wallet provider a risk off decision? And then on the kind of later side of the game lifecycle, after acquisition. So we're finishing out building our DSP. It's live right now. Like we're working with a bunch of clients. You mentioned a couple of them in the post today. But basically you come to us and you say, hey Andy, I want to get, you know, users on Android phones in India and Thailand to hit level 3 in my game. And you just choose Stardust out of the MMP, you know, like apps fly or whatever like that, the attribution team that you're using. And then we will go and do that campaign with you. We continue a spend, like a daily spend, and go get you those users. And we're working on some really cool big partnerships on that side too. Some big names that are well known in Web3 to kind of like quadruple our you know, reach for attribution, which is exciting. But yeah, so I could talk a long time about all this stuff.
All right, man, you melted my mind a little. Let's see here. Let's break this down into bite-sized chunks. Let's say I'm a early stage Web3 gaming founder. I love making games, right? That's all I've really care about. Making great games, sharing with people. But I'm also interested in tech. And now I'm at this point where I'm going to be launching publicly like an MVP or an alpha. How do the tools that Stardust will make my job or my project more successful in those early days?
That's a great question. And that is kind of like, you know, just to say, that is the crux of like Stardust as our, you know, we currently stand as a business. If we're not helping game developers make more money at the end of the day, we should exist as a business. There's no part of anything that we do that isn't focused back to that principle. That is the only thing that matters. And I'll say that I think the number one thing our industry needs right now is successful apps. We don't need more infra. You know, we don't need really anything but games to be able to go live and make money sustainably. That is like the number one focus for sure. As far as like what we do, you're going to do like an MVP, an alpha. There's a couple of things that you could do. I mean, it really depends on what you want to do on chain, what your vision is. And that's where, you know, again, we're totally white, extremely flexible on the wallet side. So we can do really whatever works, whatever vision you have. The super wait thing, if you're thinking like, oh, I've already got this game, you know, our game's about to go live and I'm going to take it live next week or tomorrow. The very, very easy thing you can do is whatever, if you're creating a user accounts, where it's really not hard to spin up any kind of, you know, login widget, OAuth, whatever. It is one API call to tell Stardust to create a wallet for those users. But do anything on chain. This is what Dr. Disrespect did. And he got a lot of like cred right away because he onboarded with us 400,000 wallets in a single day just by people having, you know, signed up to his you know, website and made an account to kind of, you know, vie for getting one of his early access, you know, tokens. But he didn't actually do the tokens of that day. He did it later on. It was just kind of an application process. But like, if you're going to have a playtest, what I'd say to developers who are kind of thinking, oh, blockchain's this big heavy lift, well, you could start with just player wallets. And that is like, you know, one line of code, basically, or just an API call to create a wallet for each user. And you can even, if you have one with our wallet system, it's wallet per user, but that address for each user is actually the same wallet address across all EVMs. So even if you decide, like, you know, next month that you actually want to be on your own private subnet on Avalanche or, you know, Arbitrum or whatever you want to be, it'll be the same exact situation. It depends on where the token contracts exist at that point, not where the wallets are created.
Hey, are you a builder looking for a grant to build your ideal Web3 gaming startup? If so, you should take a look at the Arbitrum grant program. With grants up to $25,000 and a specific focus on supporting early stage indie game devs, it could be the perfect fit. Link is in the description. Make sure to check it out. Now back to the podcast.
One housekeeping thing I forgot to mention. This is a community call, so you don't have to listen to me talk the whole time. If you have a question, you can either hop up on stage and ask it, or you can drop it in the comments and I'll for you. So just let me know. Dang, you know what's super interesting about that is like a lot of these teams are, they're moving into their seed round raise. With the bear market, the expectation to be able to successfully raise is, like that bar just has moved up. So a lot of these teams are at the point where they need to prove that they can drive on-chain activity, that they can, you know, get some of those early day 7, day 15, day 30 type metrics. Now, or even for like grant programs. So like even if they're not fundraising, you sign up with a grant for Arbitrum and now you have these milestones that you need to prove that you're delivering impact to their network. It seems like player wallets. Creating those seems like a really, really easy way to spin up that process and get started.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, that's one of the number one things that games or chains kind of making a bet on. It is a bet, a gamble on, like, you know, essentially content on their network and the volume, the future volume of, you know, assumed expected volume from a game. But if you can show, like, that these wallets are being made, obviously there's so much, just to, you know, salt this a little bit, there's so much bullshit in the space too of games, you know, and applications kind of faking their numbers a bit. You know, as far as, so at least it puts you in the conversation with that and shows that you're building. The other thing I would say is that it's such a light lift and you get to work with a trusted name like Stardust, where we're, you know, building out the entire infrastructure for Shrapnel and Dead Drop and all this other stuff. Like, it does show that you're plugged into a team that knows what they're doing right away if you're a small founder. And the other thing I would say is just that, you know, we take a very consultative approach. We, you know, are happy to chat with you. And if it's not the right time for you and your team, like, that's totally fine. We're going to be around, you know, for the next 10 years anyway. So we're happy to give our 2 cents on, like, how and why you're building the way you are in general, which can kind of help you round out how you're phrasing it back for those grants.
Gotcha. Okay, that's fantastic. Quick shout out. So Cosmic Exodus, seeing you pop in. Tom Everywhere, love to see it. Unfamiliar Dude, Chief Yeti, Mr. House, The Second Hill, JRP. We got Davey from Hey Chef. Great to have all y'all. Okay, so I know you and I talked about this a little bit on our first time we synced. For the folks who are still on the fence, they haven't quite made the decision, should I go custodial wallet because there's a ton of benefits to do it? Should I go non-custodial because of the ethos that is Web3? Can you give, like, the Stardust perspective on thinking through this challenge for these games?
Yeah, absolutely. So can I follow up with the, when you say self-custodial, are you referring to specifically like a MetaMask type of environment? Or are you talking about one of these, you know, quote-unquote self-custodial infra providers that are not owning the liability, the wallets can be exported, but it's similar. There's a different experience. So I think there's like kind of three options in my mind. There's like self-custodial MetaMask, which is, you know, very self-explanatory. There's like the middle, is sometimes being called custodial option, which is oftentimes, I mean, that's like your passports, your sequences. I think sometimes Third Web is looped in there in general, where the players can usually take ownership of the wallet later on. Oftentimes there's like a login widget. And then there's kind of our end, which is closer actually to like a Fireblocks when it comes to like white labeling full ownership of the liability. And it's just entirely the game and the app. So were you wanting to compare Tesla number one, two, or both?
But I have my cake and eat it too. Let's go. Let's
all right. Do all three. Let's compare number one then, because that's like most like straightforward, I think, is. The pop-ups of self-custodial stuff with MetaMask. I mean, the user flow becomes the big thing. The friction, now that we're doing user acquisition, you know, I can point you to directly, you know, the friction that we see in these UA campaigns of what happens and where the people drop off with the attribution data we get about when and how heavy of a lift it is to get people to go get a wallet. Or even Web3 natives don't want to hook up their wallet because they have risk of getting scammed. They don't have the right wallet for that app. It is an incredibly high mountain to climb. So the only argument in my mind to doing self-custodial wallets are, one, if you are running another user flow alongside of it, like a custodial flow, or two, you don't care about scaling yet, which is totally fine. Like, this is like, you know, we've been working with Pixels Online for almost 2 years now. They have been building, like, they built a lot of stuff self-custodial first because they knew their community was Web3 native and they wanted to build very transparently and constantly iterating with that community and not really worry about anything else. So if you're very much focused on scope of just Web3 natives, then yeah, go ahead and do that. In my mind, if you're creating user accounts, it hurts you very little to have an extra line of code to create a custodial wallet in the back, and you can kind of be running essentially, you know, another inventory option for them that's that is custodial. But I just, the number two, the semi-custodial, this is much more nuanced. This is much more what keeps Andy up at night and not at all what game developers or especially the players think about at all. But the biggest thing I would say for this is two things. The branding, the logo, all that stuff, like the real estate of the front end, we don't touch at all because we're fully custodial in the back. Whereas these semi-custodial solutions often seem to want to own some very valuable real estate, in that it's like things like passport or, you know, Sequence has login widgets as well. So this is where you're going to see that powered by Sequence, that powered by whatever other provider. I'm giving the biggest examples out there. So that to me, and, you know, is a very valuable real estate. You can see why, you know, someone like, you know, Immutable seems to have like a lot of their grants be focused on owning that portion of it. They're getting a lot of value from being capturing that user data up front, which some game developers care a lot about. Habbo is one of our clients. They are an enterprise wallet as a service client who is on Immutable X, but is using us to white label everything because they don't want to use Passport, as an example. So there's the kind of real estate that is being owned by some of these wallet providers. And then there's also just like the technical side of it as well. So I guess three things of these games. Some of them have had issues with like actual playtests and, you know, live ops, because this to me seems foolish of actual login being interrupted by your wallet provider. The wallet provider should sit and, you know, just focus on wallets and blockchain, in my opinion, rather than being such a critical engine on getting players into the game and even be able to play the game. The blockchain should be an afterthought, essentially, is that. The last thing, and what might be the most, is the liability. We squarely own the liability of the wallets. Like, that's where I liken us closer to Fireblock sometimes. If something goes wrong, it's entirely our fault. That's why we're getting our money transfer licensing. This is like regulatory compliance stuff. It is us who owns it. Whereas the self-custodial, the semi-custodial route, it's very ambiguous. And if you're at least a U.S. company, I don't think they're going to, you know, regulators, and I'm, you know, speaking out of turn here. Who knows? It's a very gray, but it's usually going to fall back to the game dev in general as far as who's responsible for something going wrong. This is partially why, you know, fairly old news, but Apple likes our solution a lot because there's no backdoor for players to have a different user experience. The entire thing is brought to the user by the game developer. And this is, the fourth thing about this, is being able to export your inventory with a backdoor with the private keys. If you have access to the private keys as a user, you could have, as an example, two tabs open and be able to withdraw an asset while the game thinks that you still own that asset. And you mess up this inventory state. State management becomes a bit of a technical problem for games when there is a persistent backdoor for players to remove their assets anytime. Yeah, I guess another more straightforward, you know, problem example would be chargebacks on credit cards. If I buy something with a credit card and I withdraw it instantly because I can do that with, if I own the private keys, then I can just dispute the charge and I get a free NFT. Whereas with a game developer using a full custodial solution, all on-chain actions come through the game dev. They approve everything. They can gray out the withdraw button. There's no other way around it. So if they want to hold it, lock it for 5 business days, they can do that. No problem.
It does feel like, you know, for Web3 to be adopted by the quote-unquote mainstream, you know, I feel like we do need to hide or not obstruct their experience. And so it does seem like what you guys have built there is really in line with helping onboard those audiences. Like, it's identical to what they would see from a traditional Web2 gaming experience.
Exactly. And everything, decide exactly what the game player is going to see. They can see their wallet address. They can see the transaction IDs. All that's just data that's being piped to the front if they have access to. Or you can talk about none of it. You know, really great way to toggle on and off blockchain, either actually executing on blockchain or what you decide to talk.
Gotcha. Okay. Let's bring this back to our founder who maybe hasn't launched his game yet, or he's about to launch his game. Can you walk me through maybe like things that they should think through or consider when it comes through like the wallet and like the managed platform you've built, and maybe three things or things that they shouldn't do, or mistakes that you keep seeing teams make? Like, maybe they go too fast and they cut corners and then they have to go back and like redo it, or they miss on the opportunity to get a bunch of wallet data or whatever. So like, can you give me maybe like a couple what teams must do or should be doing, and two things that teams should probably stop doing?
Biggest one, I think, is being cautious of grants are very, to me, as someone, I've watched games, I would get so trapped into a grant that they have to legally make and finish a title without, and then they're not going to release it because it's so bad, because the blockchain part is so fundamentally broken, they would rather just quietly waste the money, you know, and end up with an extra, you know, couple hundred K net positive from the time it took to develop that game to meet the legal requirements. I mean, you can get really trapped into a grant. That's an interesting thing for me, as an aside, like, you know, competing with competitors that are giving grants, you know, direct competitors, and meanwhile we're having people pay us for the product. You know, that is a big net swing, where sometimes people ask me, what am I going to give them? And I think you're going to give me money. So yeah, grants, I think, is the biggest thing in this. If we were to be entering a bull market here, the money starts flowing around again in funky ways, just being very, very clear about what you want out of your vision, because if these are exclusive or there's big, you know, strings attached, you're really kind of seeding a lot of, you know, reputation on some other ecosystem you can't really control that much. So that'll be the biggest thing. What I think people should do is delay the chain decision as much as possible, I guess, until you feel like you're ready to do something meaningful. You could, as an example, be partnering with someone like a Stardust who's chain agnostic and not have to still be talking about wallets, all this stuff, without actually picking a chain, and focus on the product. I mean, this is, I think you'll hear all similar people in my industry kind of say something similar. It's like the game is all there is, really. It doesn't matter where you build it. It matters so much how good the game is. That is it. You know, you have to make sure that you're focusing on that.
Can I ask you, so this isn't a question related to Stardust, but it seems like you've been in a lot of different parts of the industry and you're super aware. So for like a lot of these teams, they use grant programs almost the same as bootstrapping, right? So it's actually funding development. So without those early grants, they may not have the money to develop like their MVP. I hear you on being cautious with the chain selection and head off as far as possible, but with capital as tight as it is in this market, I think that's a tough thing for teams to wrestle with.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I think that I guess I would then just be making sure that it's in an agreement, or that it's a milestone base, where if you guys don't hit that certain milestone, then then, you know, you have a way to move somewhere else if you're not happy, or if you can't hit that milestone, what happens because of something with the chain? You're starting to get locked into something that you did, where you're not going to have a path to success. Like, make sure that we're, you know, understanding how you're going to build a game on a net. Like, actually, don't take the money because the money is there, I guess is my point. Like, you need to make sure that this is a viable strategy. And I'm not saying that, you know, most grants aren't that, but there are grants being given out right now for, you know, tech that is not finished, underlying tech that is not finished. And it's just, that is not necessarily a viable path to success, is what I would say.
Let's drop some names, Andy. No, I'm just playing. Don't. Please don't. I want to read off a comment. So this is from Unfamiliar Dude from Unfamiliar Territory. He says, I can attest to how easy the Stardust system is to use, being able to manage as many smart collections as you can imagine, all with an easy API call. Wow.
Yeah. So we do have two products. One is focused specifically just on wallets and signing transactions, and that's on every EVM right now. So every single one, which is very cool. Like, I'm up on people's test subnets that they've spun up this morning. I'm up on, you know, you name it, really, as well as SV, Solana, and Aptos. And then Unfamiliar Dude is rocking our managed product, which is our first infrastructure product that is kind of like not an all-in-one solution, but it does take care of a lot of the stuff all at once. So we own contract creation, we abstract gas for you, so you can just, all with a very simple API, just, you know, create new token contracts, transfer them around, update the metadata, all that good stuff. And that's on Polygon and Avalanche right now.
All right, folks, so I want to be respectful of Andy's time. We booked this for 30 minutes. We got a couple minutes to go. Any questions, comments, concerns you want me to MC and share, feel free to drop them either in Discord or in Twitter. Also, shout out to Jordan. See Jordan pop it in. JRP, we got you in both. How about that? Yeah, but thanks for setting this up, Andy. It's been really interesting to learn about Stardust and your guys' approach to solving some of these problems that folks are wrestling with. We didn't spend a ton of time on the UA piece, so I apologize for that. I guess while we're waiting for any last questions to come in, anything else you want to maybe tease us with on the UA side?
Yeah,
to maybe get folks excited.
Yes, badly. This is kind of the future of Stardust in a lot of ways, because right now on the wallets and infrastructure, actually starting to sign deals with platforms that are essentially going to be competitors to Stardust. And you know some of these names already. So focusing on just owning like their wallets infra is the idea, and letting them kind of essentially have their own version of the managed product. But in a lot of ways, what we want to do is scale across all these ecosystems as far as blockchains and all the platforms as service providers. And we want to sit further and further back, deeper and deeper into the earth we go. And then the user acquisition is where it becomes really powerful. Imagine, if you will, Ryan is playing 7 games on 7 different blockchains. He has, you know, 100 tokens across those 7 custodial wallets, and he's connected his, you know, self-custodial wallet to 3 of those games. And maybe there's 2 different self-custodial wallets he's connected. And on one of those wallets, he's very active on DeFi, and the other one, you know, not really. He has some NFTs in there. That is a lot of data. And especially if we talk about the next degree of data, where it's not just what's in the wallet, but why. Why did the things end up in his wallet? Did he buy that item? Did he trade it? Did he pick it up? Did he earn it? Did he grind for it? There's about 10 parameters that Facebook used that were able to calculate the value of a given player on the Facebook, you know, games, API, marketplace stuff. This is how Facebook became such a powerful entity. It's not the fact that everyone was using Facebook, it's that they were able to organize all the data so well and pass that value on to advertisers. And that's the future of Stardust. You're going to be able to come to Stardust and buy into our data analytics as well as the inventory of users for your game, be able to go to more users. But as blockchain data becomes potentially more data on chain, who's poised to recognize it than Stardust, who can go grab and thread the needle across Ryan's 7 different games on 7 blockchains, 7 wallets, and say, yeah, Ryan monetizes really well in these 3 genres, and we can go to get you 100,000 similar Ryans because we know all these games across all this whole ecosystem. So that's the future that we're tied together with blockchain.
All right. Do you have time for one more question, or do you have a hard stop?
I got time for one more. It's an internal meeting, so I've got time for one more question.
All right, one more question. That's super interesting. So it's almost like the traditional Web2 ads platform where you choose like a user profile, you set up a budget, maybe a couple $1,000 or whatever, and then your platform will go out, find and advertise, and ultimately bring in that user to my game. And then it scales because you bring me more paying users than I pay you to find them.
Exactly.
Is that it?
I mean, yeah, we're essentially taking, do you know what IDFA is? This is identification for advertisers, and what people might know it better as these days is that little pop-up on iPhones that say ask app, not to track.
Yeah.
This is a global identifier that Apple used, and I was going to get rid of it in a second too, where, you know, essentially all the data was being passed back to the advertisers to be able to, you know, do machine learning and figure out exactly what's the best chance of you monetizing with what ads they could service you. As IDFA has been nuked, we saw the first fall in mobile game advertising, which was like, right, it's basically hyperbolic. And yeah, so this is a massive change to the momentum that was there. Everyone in mobile gaming, at least, I was looking for ways to spend their money to get UA back on track. And this seems to be like the perfect, you know, early, at least 5 years from the money we need and all the, you know, bring up plumbing to all these games to start to get to that point. That is the future, is like taking all this on chain, because it's essentially, you know, a ton of data, but someone has to be able to organize it. So yeah, you'll be able to come to us as a new game. You don't have to use our wallets at all. And you'll be able to say, you can say right now, you'll get me these users of this type. And we're just going to slowly and then very quickly all at once rapidly increase your return on ad spend, where, you know, it's suddenly getting better. The moment it gets better, genre by genre, a Web2 traditional user acquisition, that's where Andy goes to GDC and I'm just the big guy on campus, because that's where a Web3 executive, or sorry, a Web2 game executive who has no interest in blockchain. This is the first top-down pitch to executives versus the bottom-up emotional appeal of owning your assets. They don't care about you and your assets. They don't care. They care about the bottom line. This is the way for them to increase their mind. They incorporate the Stardust Events Ingestion API and they get access to all this data. And suddenly, if their return on ad spend is better, this is a, we'll be in like 2 years, $50+ billion per year industry. It's a massive mastery. And the moment, and it's all very transactional, the return on ad spend is better somewhere else, they dump them into that channel for inventory for new users. It's just very black and white.
What a great place to end off on. Andy, this has been exceptional. You've given us some time and walking us through all this. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a lot of fun. Good questions, and happy to come back. And also, if anyone individually ever wants to chat, we're happy to chat.
Right on. All right, everybody. I'm going to give you back your day. You all get out there and build. Have a great time and take it easy.
Peace.
All right, sounds good.
Peace.